greetings to everybody out there at TFMR. It is Thanksgiving weekend, time to reflect and be thankful for all that we have. And what do we have here? We have the Jackass. It is a bit of a holiday tradition here at TFMR that we get a three-day or four-day holiday weekend. We like to bring in the Jackass, give him the floor, let him take the mic, and let him tell us what is currently on his mind. This time we're using our A2A, GoToWebinar format, so that you, the active participant listener, can actually ask questions directly of the Jackass. You type them in on your GoToWebinar control panel, they come to me, and I relay them on to him, and what a great opportunity to actually interact with the Golden Jackass himself. Of course, we're talking about Jim Willie. His site is goldenjackass.com. He is the editor of the wonderful, fantastic Hat Trick Letter. All of that can be found, again, at goldenjackass.com. He's a longtime friend of Turdville, and here he is back to join us once again. Jim, my friend, happy Thanksgiving.
Well, thanks. We actually don't practice it here. We got a different one. I think it's in May. I don't know. I don't care. I have plenty to be... I have plenty to be thankful for, Craig, to be sure. But, you know, as the country slides into the – it's hard to describe what it's sliding into. It's sliding into an oblivion. It's sliding into an abyss. It's getting deeper into a fascist state. What I find remarkable, and just as a quick preface, I find that almost nobody that I talk to of American citizenship has any idea what fascism is.
Yeah, not anymore.
None. There's kind of a definition of fascism. Well, you know, that's what Nazi Germany was, but it's not possible for the United States to have that. Well, yeah, it is. We got it right now.
Depends on, I guess, everybody has... It's hard for people get to agree on what the term actually means. You know, a lot of people scream up and go, "You're a fascist!" And they have no idea what the term even means. It just sounds good. It makes you sound smart to say somebody's a fat, or at least you think you're smart if you call somebody that.
Oh, I try to get smart and tell them that I think they're a nihilist.
That's good. That'll send them to scramble into the dictionary.
Well, it usually shuts them up and they walk away. All right, let's move on.
All right, well, let's just dive right in. Again, it's always fun to get caught up. It's now been several months since we've spoken. And I thought, Jim, you know, what I usually do on these formats is I get to ask the questions first, but there are going to be so many questions for you that I don't want to take too much time doing that. And so I do think, though, I have one topic I'd like you to address, and it seems to be really the most important topic at present. Events in the Middle East are moving very quickly, whether they're politically, geopolitically, in terms of possible war. Between maybe Lebanon, Hezbollah, Israel, Syria, all that stuff is moving that direction. We got the events of Saudi Arabia and Yemen, and I mean, I could just go on and on describing how effed up that whole situation is. But I know you're all over this. You've got great contacts throughout the world that keep you up to speed on not only what's happening there, but you can see, but what's going on below the surface. And so, between what's happening in Saudi Arabia, the purge and the arrests, what's going on with the Saudi Aramco IPO and who might be buying that, and how badly do the Saudis need the cash, and the U.S. supporting them and defending them for the petrodollar. And I mean, obviously, I could probably let you start talking. You could talk for a whole hour just on this, but I think we'll start there. Give us your current thoughts on that whole situation, then we'll start getting into the listener questions.
It's such an enormous topic. You're right. An hour would not be enough. But let me just hit on some main high-level points. And I'm not operating on notes here. I just finished the Money War report for November. It's being posted this morning before noon. There's an entire chapter. It was 10 pages on Saudi Arabia. 10! I mean, it's crazy what's going on right now. I titled the chapter Saudi Purge and Instability. I want to start off by saying that there's not a firm consensus about what's happening with the Saudis. and I'm going to call Saudi the country, because it's Saudi Arabia. I get tired of saying Saudi Arabia. Some call it KSA, the Kingdom of Saudi. For me, it's just Saudi. Okay, Saudi, Saudi land. To begin with, this prince, the crown prince, Mohammed bin Salman, he was not directly in line, and it got confusing who's directly in line for the king position, the throne. It got confusing when they ran out of strong brothers. There was Fahd, there was Abdullah, and after that, it's really a bunch of runt brothers. So the runt brothers are fighting with some of the relatives of the stronger brothers who have the dead King Fahd and the dead King Abdullah. Oh my gosh, it gets extremely complicated. There was another fellow, his name was also Muhammad. I'm coming to learn that the firstborn is called Muhammad in the family. All right, a different Muhammad, bin Nayef, was the favorite of Langley. But King Salman decided, I don't want that nephew of mine to be the crown prince. I'm the king. I'm going to make it my son, Muhammad bin Salman. He's called MBS. And here's some irony. 10 years ago, we had the explosion of mortgage-backed securities. So we had an MBS crisis. You can see where I'm going with this. Right now we have a passage of power and the throne in Saudi. It's MBS again. Oh my gosh. MBS pushed aside the Langley favorite, you know, the CIA favorite for the crown prince post. It was Mohammed bin Nayef, MBN. Okay, Langley's upset. Now, part of these purges, oh gosh, I like the word purge much better than I like arrest for corruption, because how do you define corruption? Is it corrupt for a royal family to do nothing all their lives and to siphon off a few billion a year? I think it is. I mean, what's the crime? It's not corruption. I think the crime is laziness and sloth. Parasite. Okay. Some of the arrested, there were many, many arrested. They're not just princes. They're Saudi officials in the government. They're business leaders who are, you know, doing questionable deeds. It's very pervasive what the arrests included. And my take on it is that those arrested and detained come from a few categories. Rival family, owner of broadcast media, owner of other critical companies involved with trade and investment, opponents to his foreign policy, military leaders who object to the war in Yemen, and here's the zinger, some narcotics connections like Prince Bandar with Langley and the Bush family. Okay, here's, you know, the best possible interpretation. I got this from The Voice, and The Voice is a man with many opinions, but he also has this opinion. He said, Jim, it is possible that MBS Crown Prince is not just cleaning house, not just, you know, stopping corruption, but he's trying to end the lazy connections to the royal family from, say, the sixth brother and, you know, a family that really doesn't amount to much, doesn't have a whole lot of connections or influence or you know, intellectual horsepower or whatever. But he's also cutting, perhaps, the narco connections to Saudi Arabia that he does not like. And The Voice said, Jim, you may not be aware, but 15, 20 years ago, Prince Salman, who's now King Salman, in his previous position, was governor of Jeddah. And he was known as being a very thorough policeman, if you will. What he did was he cleaned things up. He got rid of corruption. He didn't really care if somebody was a distant royal or whatever, he arrested them, he confiscated property, he confiscated wealth if they were guilty of crime. Okay, so he has a history of being tough, like a tough district attorney, if you will, in the city of Jeddah. Okay, well now his son has a vision. His son does not like the Wahhabi Islam element in the upper levels of the Saudi royal family. So he's trying to bring about a more secular combination alliance with the Sunni moderate Islam. And I think it's going to be tough. Now let's try to get the connection with Prince Al-Waleed. You know, I'm a very irreverent guy. For the longest time, I call him Prince Dickweed. Sorry about
that. Yeah, me too. I didn't even realize. I was calling him Prince Allah Dickweed, too.
Okay, well, he is a Wahhabi. He's a fundamentalist. I think they're crazy. I think they're just wild crazy in their interpretations of the Quran, and I don't even want to get into it. But
right.
He's an opponent of Prince Salman. And they don't get along. And the whole Vegas incident might have been an attempt to kill the prince, Prince Salman. He was at the Four Seasons Hotel, which is at the top of the Mandalay. And
that
gets
right?
Very, very ugly.
I didn't really. At the same time, Prince Salman was at the Four Seasons?
Yes.
I had no idea. That's crazy.
There was a lot of shooting, and the reports, at least from the U.S. Army surgeon from Walter Reed Hospital, who went to the hospitals, he reported there was a lot of fake blood, but he was silenced, not killed. He was just told, shut up. There were not very many broken windows because there were blank bullets fired. There may have been some deaths. To be sure, there were some deaths, and it's all pretty horrible. And it gets very complicated. There was a helicopter spotted on the roof, and it was not the police. It was not the press. It was the getaway. And I don't want to get into a lot of the more ugly details because it's not certain about what exactly is going on.
Yeah, that's crazy.
But it looks like Prince Al-Waleed was trying to do an assassination and a palace coup of Prince Salman.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a new one. I haven't heard that one. That's wild to think that. Huh. All right, anyway, continue.
Okay. So some of the arrested
in Saudi Arabia.
They include Prince Al-Waleed.
Right. Dickweed.
Yeah. And the offer that is in the press, it's widely now reported, is that the arrested, which include well over 100 royals, is forfeit, I think it's 60% of your wealth, or else you're going to jail. So the purge and the arrests are also a financing campaign. This is pretty weird. I've never heard of anything like this in my entire life. You have some businessmen who are also arrested. You have some military generals who are arrested. You have a broadcast center head, and he was arrested. Apparently, Prince Mansour Mukrin is the highest ranking in a group of 11 deaths in a helicopter crash.
Yeah, right.
Okay, now this includes a bin Laden. It includes the potential heir to the throne, Mansour Mukrin. It includes a satellite broadcast executive named, Adal Ibrahim, a former Minister of Economy and Planning, Abdel Fakih. Now, I ask a question. How did the helicopter get downed? Was that from Yemeni rebels, or was that from a loyal element of the Saudi military to the crown prince to protect from a palace coup?
Mechanical failure.
This is very complicated. Now, okay, apart from the coup, apart from the arrests, there is going to be some new funding to the Saudi treasury. And I ask the question, is that to pay for the bills or is it to continue the war in Yemen?
You're talking about the Saudi Aramco?
No. There's money coming in from the arrests and the purges, what I've just talked about.
I got you.
I haven't even gotten to Aramco.
Right.
Okay, so money's going to be coming in from the arrests of 100 royals who are all multi-billionaires who are told to forfeit 60% or stay in jail or stay in the hotel. I mean, it's like house arrest in a giant luxurious hotel. I doubt they're enjoying themselves. And now there are reports that some of them have been beaten up and are going to the hospital for wounds while under interrogation. So there's a lot of rivalry. There's a lot of bad blood. There's a lot of half-brothers. This is very ugly. This is very complicated. Yeah. There's going to be money coming in to the Saudi treasury from the confiscations. There's 1,700 bank accounts that are confiscated or frozen. They've asked for help with United Arab Emirates and Kuwait to lock down those bank accounts also. They're like holding companies. I mean, let's put a few spare billion in Kuwait in case we need to get away. That's the thinking of the royals. These are people who, many of whom never work, but lay claim to billions. So I think Prince MBS is removing the connections from parasites and opponents. And it looks like Prince Al-Waleed, I wouldn't be the least bit surprised if Al-Waleed was in charge of downing the helicopter, because Prince Mukreen was perhaps a rival to the throne. Oh, my goodness. Right.
So, Jim, what is this? If MBS is going to be the guy going forward and he's purging all these people, and I'm obviously taking their cash, helps them with their little cash problem they're having, what does this mean for, I mean, can you decipher, read the tea leaves about what this means for the short-term future of the whole petrodollar and ultimately the Saudis moving in the direction of the Chinese, that kind of stuff?
Yeah, that's where I was going to go. Here's how the confiscation, I say money coming in. Let me just talk about, let me refer to that as the confiscations and that resulting flow of funds. It's a big flow of funds. It's super big. It could be a couple $100 billion. Okay. It means the Crown Prince Salman might not need to do many concessions with China. It means that he might not require a good gob of funding for Saudi investments. Mm-hmm. They're probably going to do some upgrades with Aramco. Okay, I haven't touched on Aramco yet. That's intentional because this is all very big apart from Aramco. Okay, there's pressure by the Chinese to permit not just Saudi but Arab oil sales. They buy oil from Qatar and pay in RMB. They want to buy Saudi oil and pay for it RMB. The Saudis have been resisting that, and the result has been that China has been expanding in a very large scale their purchases of Russian oil. It looks like the Saudis might do something dumb right now, and that's not give the Saudis, not give the Chinese the right to buy Saudi oil in RMB. The Saudis might close the door on China. And if they do, The Saudis are going to be stuck with both the good and the bad elements from the United States. And that's how I see it. Well, go ahead.
Don't you think, and wouldn't the Chinese probably retaliate and use maybe Iran as a proxy against the Saudis as well? I mean, wouldn't they run that risk?
Yeah, that's a risk for the Saudis right now. The Chinese and the Iranians are very close in terms of trade and energy purchase. And Iran is increasingly close with the Russians for a number of things that include military activity and military. Purchases of weapons, but also joint drills and, you know, cooperation. With China, it's more trade and, you know, managing the barter and the big account. With Russia, it's all the above. Russians don't buy Iranian oil. Right. Russians have their own oil and gas. But Russians engage in trade, construction projects, but not too many, missile sales and other, uranium refinement equipment, stuff like that. For the Iranians. All right, let's get back to the Saudis. If they shut the door on China and piss them off, Saudi's going to be stuck dealing with the both good and bad elements of the United States. That means the white hat military, Pentagon, but it also means dealing with the angry Langley group, because Prince Bandar is their guy, and he was arrested. And they're going to probably try to confiscate a lot of his wealth. They're probably going to try to confiscate and arrest a couple of other key figures. It's not just Bandar Bush. That's his nickname, Bandar Bush, Prince Bandar. What was his role in the past years? Well, I'll tell you. He was paid to come up with a list of patsies. It was his list of the 10 or 11 young Cessna pilots who were blamed for 9/11. It was from Bandar Bush on a contract, a sweet multi-billion dollar contract, to get that all prepared to set up the patsies. Okay, that's something that, for instance, Max Kaiser is not very aware of, and he needs to be more aware of, the patsies. Bandar Bush, Prince Bandar, was charged with that, was, you know, given that commission. He survived 3 years ago some attacks. I think they were not in Saudi Arabia, but he was hospitalized in Saudi Arabia. And amazingly, Craig, I had a client who was not living in Saudi at the time. He was living in the American hemisphere. Let's leave it at that. And he was the IT head for the hospital in Jeddah where they were hiding Prince Bandar, who was almost killed by some bombs. And he talked to some nurses and found out, yeah, that's Prince Bandar. And he tried to get as much information as he could, and he was amazed how little he could get except just to see the steady flow of helicopters coming in to visit Prince Bandar. And I'm sure some of them were the narco managers. So I think Bandar Bush has a group of 6, 7, 8, 10 narco managers. I'm really curious to know, were they arrested too? Because if Prince Salman makes an enemy a second time with Langley by confiscating and really running through the mill the entire narco connection in Saudi Arabia, which is significant in connection to the Bushes, he's gonna earn Langley vengeance, and that usually means a funeral. This is getting very, very ugly. Prince Salman needs to be careful. He pushed aside the Langley favorite as crown prince from another half-brother family. It gets messy because when they're kings, they like to have women, and they don't, how should I say, use protection. So they end up having lots of kids with lots of women. And the men are all half-brothers, and then they lay claim to the throne. It's a battle of 60 to 70 half-brothers. It gets incredibly complicated.
Like biblical.
It then becomes primogeniture. Who's the oldest brother? Okay, yeah. The oldest son. Fine, we take him. All right, now when he's dead, we take the next oldest brother. And when he's dead, we'll take the next older brother. And when we run out of significant brothers, we're going to have a battle. I call them the runts. There might be two, and you know what I mean. There's a brother yeah. who's just a ne'er-do-well. A brother who just has no idea what's going on, who's maybe out in the desert at the strip clubs or on his yacht all the time getting drunk. He's not fit to be king. That's what I call a runt brother. So he's ruled out. And when he's ruled out, you start talking about the sons of the powerful ex-kings. That's what's going on right now. Now, Prince Salman has some visions for recreating and reconstructing Saudi Arabia to get away from its dependence on oil. And a lot of analysts in the West are thinking he might be using code to proclaim that he wants to get away from the dollar.
Mm-hmm.
And if he does that, he's going to earn the same kind of anger that was heaped upon Saddam Hussein.
And Muammar Gaddafi.
Yeah, and Gaddafi. Gaddafi, he not only wanted to sell oil outside the dollar, he wanted to create a gold dinar
mm-hmm.
for North Africa and all their production of oil. And he didn't get very far. I still wonder if Gaddafi is alive, escaped all that, and allowed the stories of his double being killed and disemboweled. I don't know. It's hard to know. There were reports of Gaddafi running around in Zimbabwe 2 years ago. But who knows? Maybe it was somebody just pretending to be Gaddafi. I don't know. The point is, Prince Salman has a vision. They call it Vision 2030. He wants to expand and create a city, a new city in Saudi Arabia. This is some of his, you know, I think this is a little bit of a break from reality for the prince. I mean, the crown prince, Salman. He wants the new city to be 15 times larger or greater than New York City. Okay, well, you know, my calculus says that's 150 to 200 million people. Really, Prince? Where are you going to get the money? From confiscated royal accounts, confiscated narco accounts, confiscated business executive accounts? Because it ain't going to come from crude oil income. Oh, I don't know how he's going to do this.
Yeah.
And furthermore, if you're a European or a North American businessman and you're watching the confiscations and arrests, are you going to want to invest a few billion in Saudi Arabia?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's move on to Aramco, shall we?
Yes. And Jim, I might. We've probably got about five more minutes before I start. Got to start getting into the questions if we're going to keep on our timeline.
Okay.
So, Aramco.
Let me be brief. Aramco is a fraud. Saudi Arabia is engaged in the Yemen war because they're depleting their oil reserves. Yemen is on the same Arabian Peninsula to their south. It's loaded with oil and gas. A few stories accidentally find their way into the Western press about the ample oil and gas deposits in Yemen. The truth of the matter regarding Saudi is that they have depleted their oil reserves to a great extent. And they lie about, they actually say they have 260 billion barrels of oil left. If they have 20% of that, I would be amazed. So they've been pumping oil for 50 years, world leader for 40 years or more, and they've got no depletion. Oh yeah, I can understand that math. Uh-huh. That's called stupid math. It doesn't add up at all. Okay, so there are Western analysts out there who use Royal Dutch, Exxon, Rosneft, and other very large oil companies, and they do a comparative analysis, and they come up with a figure of $300 to $400 billion for the value of Aramco, not $2,000 billion. I know. I think it's 4 to 5 times. So 400 to 500 billion is the value of Aramco. And my joke is, what percentage of that is for their equipment? Because their oil deposits are largely gone.
Yeah, blue sky.
They have, yeah, the blue sky. I think 80% of the Aramco valuation comes from their petrochemical machinery, equipment, plants. That's my opinion. We have some complications. The Western analysts have been tarnishing this IPO by saying it's worth 4 to 5 times less, so they can't get an underwriter. Because if an underwriter, like let's just say Barclays of London, Barclays comes forth and has a big stock deal, and they usher in their nice, rosy clients, their well-heeled clients. They get lawsuits in the next year when the discovery takes place and they determine that the oil reserves are not present. I think there is a problem right now, preliminary to the IPO, of actual discovery for potential clients and their brokerage houses. So London and New York have been ruled out. Hong Kong is in. I think we're likely to see the Chinese buy a stake, and they claim it's 5% stake of Aramco when it's really going to be 25, because they're going to lie to the public and admit to China that their entire valuation is 5 times less. So 5% becomes 25%. Trump is doing something, trying to kiss the prince's hind parts and hope for a New York City listing of the Aramco stock. But he seems to forget that he is so happy about the Saudi lawsuit law in the Congress that blames Saudi Arabia for 9/11, which is absolutely cockeyed nonsense propaganda, and allows for lawsuits by surviving families against the U.S.-held Saudi assets. So Saudi doesn't want New York as a listing because they're out looking to borrow money, like from Russia, and raise money with Aramco because their assets are frozen. This happened 3 years after the Swiss banks have their charade with UBS and Credit Suisse. Announced criminality, the U.S. comes in. What jurisdiction does the U.S. have in the Swiss banks? None. So why do they come in and take control of the two companies? I'll tell you why. They stole the Arab gold, which was largely Saudi, in the Swiss bullion banks. This is another side of ugly complicated. Everything about Saudi is ugly complicated.
It's just like one thing leads to the next.
Right, and I didn't really get into a lot of details of narcotics, because they're funneling narcotics funds to ISIS.
You know, and actually, that's the first question I have of the emails. So maybe I'll just go there at this point. But it's like Saudi is like that Russian little, you know, puzzle, you know, with the babushka dolls, you know, where there's a big one, you open it up, and then there's another one, and then you open that, and there's a smaller one inside that, and a smaller one inside that. It's just one after the other, isn't it?
Well, yeah, Saudi's a complicated country. It's a kingdom. Yeah. I didn't even get into the resentment for internal problems from a growing young population,
yeah,
a population that is not as fervent with Islam as 20 years ago,
right?
That resents the royal families living lives of billionaires and never working. Like, the national wealth has been plundered. The people are angry. And now their gasoline price just went up 40% to $1 a gallon.
And to that end, Jim, look at they finally had to yield on letting women drive.
Oh, yeah, I'd like to see some women in bikinis on their beach.
There you go.
Yeah, right, there you go.
Here, let me, at this point, let me, because you mentioned ISIS, and this is another multifaceted deep question, but I've got 4 questions emailed to me. I got 6 or 7 in queue, and we've got, what, a half hour, 40 minutes tops? So let me go into this, Jim, and we'll just see where all this takes us again, because I don't know I mean, all I can do is relay to you these questions, and I'll let you just run with it.
I'll try to make them brief because we covered a lot of good stuff with some depth.
All right, this first one comes from a Canadian TFMR subscriber named Chuck. He's got a two-part question, but I'll hit you with the first one, and then maybe we'll double back to the second part. He says, you know, there's been a lot of this news lately. I think, what was it, in the Financial Times? About the U.S. providing cover to those ISIS guys getting out of Raqqa. Remember that? It was maybe a week ago that all that broke. Getting them all out of there before the Syrian army could wipe them out. Where the hell those guys go, do you think? Where did they get redeployed to? So that there could be another, you know, U.S. intervention or whatever problem. Where'd those guys go, Jim?
They went to Iraq. Iraq has some significant – I must preface. I'm not an expert in ISIS movements and the battles going on with the many different sides in Syria and the boundary areas in Iraq. I'm not an expert, but a friend of mine is. He talked to me a week ago, and he said the ISIS troops have control of northern Iraq. And ISIS does not have control of much of anything in Syria. So if there's any escape by ISIS guerrillas, militias, it's to the strongholds in Iraq.
So all right, so what are they going to stage there? What happens next to those guys, regardless of their, let's call it their genealogy, how they be, you know, how ISIS came about and all that kind of stuff?
I think what's going to happen next is the United States gets out of Iraq so they don't have a second round to a war there.
Okay.
ISIS is very likely to team up with elements that are not friendly to the United States.
Right.
U.S. has very few friends in that region. There are about three or four different factions, and I'm not sure any of them are friendly with the United States except for some old loyals in Baghdad, Iraq, and the ISIS guerrillas. I think all the rest hate the United States and would kill them in a moment's notice.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Next. This is not an area of expertise for me.
That's so fine. All right. How about this one? This comes from Australia. This comes from Ronnie. I'll just read this to you. It's a number of sentences. In my mind, the U.S. has already in reality declared war on China and Russia. We see the North Korea ramp up, the movement of U.S. troops into Somalia to neutralize the Chinese base in Djibouti, the continued assault on Russia directly with sanctions and indirectly. The question is, when do the East respond? We all understand that a financial assault will convert the U.S. fleet into a mass of floating scrap metal. We saw that with the USSR. The East will have the financial means to retaliate. Jim, why are they not doing this, and when might that change?
Russia and China don't want World War III. Why should they retaliate on a military front?
Well, I think he's talking about retaliating financially.
They are. China's been dumping tremendous amounts of treasury bonds and doing more so from their sovereign wealth funds than from their official accounts. The war is the U.S. versus Russia. I call it the Rothschild War. I mean, as soon as the Rothschilds were kicked out of the banking system in Moscow, Ukraine happened. yet the nitwits in the United States haven't figured that out yet. Okay, we're at war with Russia. We're moving missiles to the Russian border to prevent their expansion when the United States is the only one with any visible expansion. So we're blaming Russia for what we're doing. We're expanding NATO to include Eastern Europe, former Soviet bloc countries. That's the expansion, but we're blaming Russia for expansion. It's cockeyed. It's insane. It's lunatic.
Right.
Okay, we're not at war with China. I disagree with that questioner. We're provoking a troublesome trade partner in the China Sea and the Straits. And I didn't want to talk about North Korea. That's just crazy, and I got some opinions that are a little bit wild, and I don't want to talk about North Korea. North Korea is something that the United States uses to try to provoke China. It just doesn't work.
Right.
China will not allow itself to be provoked. Instead, it will respond by launching more vehicles of a non-dollar nature heading down the path toward the gold standard. That's the Chinese response. China is still an active trade partner with the United States, still doing $20 billion in trade surplus with the United States per month. So anyone who claims we're at war with China is just dead wrong. You don't have a big trade partner with China and be at war with them. We do block certain isolated products. For instance, right now, China is very content in buying more grains and vegetables from Russia. One of the big secret stories out there right now is that Russia is a magnificent exporter of agricultural goods. They're turning lots of arable steppe land into farmland. I mean, it's entire communities with just agriculture that don't have cities too close nearby.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We're not at war with China. We are at war with Russia, and Germany is coming into the picture as saying, we're sick of your whole conflict with Russia. We're going to expand trade again with Russia. Okay, that's the zinger in Europe.
Well, then, let me use that as a segue to the first listener question that comes from Chris, because you mentioned China ultimately in reinforcing some type of gold standard or some monetary standard, you know, financial stability, whatever. Dr. Chris refers to that as the Great Reset. Seems like that's been around the corner for a couple of years now. How close do you think, you know, we are to that eventuality?
Okay, I think we're in the reset. So if you're waiting for the reset, you've missed elements of the early parts of the reset. The announcement of the cross-border interbank payment system, the CIPS, that's part of the reset. That competes with the SWIFT program and makes countries that join the Eurasian Trade Zone untouchable to SWIFT sanctions. That's a reset. The Asian Infrastructure Investment Bank, that is a giant fund that Great Britain joined and angered the Obama administration. Okay, that whole fund, pardon, the activity for that fund is part of the reset for redirecting construction funds away from the dollar. That's part of paradigm shift and reset. The One Belt, One Road is a giant table. It's like a conference room of deals being struck. They're all done in non-dollar payment system, probably with the CIPS. Construction firms from the West coming into that. Look for Germany to play a big part. I think One Belt, One Road, and it's all of its huge progress, is part of the reset. So obviously, the questioner hasn't missed that, but he's not defining that to be part of the reset. I think a lot of Westerners are expecting the reset to be like a 7-day-long solar eclipse.
Yeah.
I mean, it reminds me of the story of a guy who was caught in a flood, and he prayed and prayed and prayed for help from God, and a helicopter came by, and the guy said, "No, I'm waiting for God." And when he died and went to heaven, he said, "Well, where were you?" And he said, "God said, I sent you the helicopter." Okay? So, you know, the reset is in front of your nose. It has some preliminary elements like you know, on-ramps to a highway. The on-ramps are the AIIB, the One Belt, One Road, and the CIPS competitor to SWIFT. We're going to see more. Okay, when the Chinese came out with their gold oil contract, immediately observers reasoned, well, gee, if they come up, if they have a gold, I'm sorry, if they have a yuan, an RMB oil contract, that could be combined because they already got a RMB gold contract. Put the three together and you got oil producers can take payment in RMB and convert to gold. That's the beauty of the rolled out vehicles by the Chinese. Okay, that is the reset in spades.
Right.
Okay, now we have the Chinese gold oil contract announced, but it has not rolled out yet. It has not been initiated. It hasn't begun its volume trading. When it was announced, I believe it was September or late August, the voice said to me, Jim, this is the first of several rollouts. They're all going to be non-dollar. They're all going to be powerful elements to the reset. And they've all been stress tested already. And they're going to come out 2 or 3 months apart from each other. I said, well, that sounds like an 18-month process. He said, well, it'll be at least a year. But they're all non-dollar. They've all been stress tested. And they will all take the world trade and resultant banking outside the dollar in the Eurasian trade zone. I call it the Eurasian trade zone. He doesn't call it that. He calls it the Eastern Alliance. He calls it a few different things. Okay, so the bigger pieces, the more important pieces to the reset are going to come real soon. We've had one, but I really think that we've had two. The cross-border, some people call it the Chinese Interbank Payment System, CIPS. It's really cross-border. In other words, international. So the CIPS to compete with SWIFT, that's a big piece to the reset.
Yeah.
Very big. I mean, you also have the Russians with Sberbank putting up an office in Beijing to collect gold. So the Russians are selling energy, primarily oil, and converting some of it to gold. But the Russians don't need to pile a lot of gold. They've already got 25,000 tons. And they just laugh at us for paying great attention for the minuscule additions to the Russian increases at their central bank. What do they have, 1,300 tons now that are recognized? What about all the tonnage that's not recognized?
Right, kind of like the Chinese.
Well, the Chinese actually have sovereign wealth funds. They have the SAFE and I think it's a CIC, and there's a third one, a sovereign wealth fund, much smaller. But add up the Chinese, they got $1.5 trillion in their sovereign wealth funds. You think any of that is in gold? And that's not counted in the official central bank gold tally.
Right.
So the Russian Kremlin vaults are not counted either in the Russian central bank official gold tally. The official gold tally is a point of amusement. But it's a point of great interest in the West.
Right.
Because you're knuckleheads. All right, let's move on. You probably
move
more.
On to the next question. There was a stuff over the weekend. I saw a few people post links to this on my site over the weekend, that there was a Marine Expeditionary Unit that landed outside of the CIA headquarters in Langley, and that they flew in there to military take over the CIA to keep them from enacting a coup. I don't know what to make of all that. Do you have heard anything about that?
Well, I've heard the story too. I'm waiting for some confirmations. I haven't heard too much in the way of confirmation. Only the three or four different alternative news sources are saying pretty much the same thing. It sounds like something on the order of 400 troops from a group of large helicopters. You know, let me just ask some questions rather than attempt to shed light on it, which I cannot do ably. Let me ask some questions. Was it to stop a Langley coup? Because Langley has been pretty much in control of the puppet strings for Papa Bush, Clinton, Baby Bush, and Obama. I'm talking about three different 8-year terms, that's 24, plus another 4 for Bush. But you could argue that Bush, Papa Bush, was in charge of 7 of the 8 years under Reagan after he tried to kill him. Okay, so Langley got spoiled and had control for over 24 years, put it like that, of the White House. Now they're angry that they don't control the White House, so I don't know, they might be planning a coup. Yeah. Here's the alternative question. Are the troops from the Pentagon there to grab records of narcotics movements?
Yeah. Pedophilia?
If so, are they there perhaps to gain information before they seize offshore accounts? Three or four years ago, I had a conversation with Cato, and he told me the Association for Past Presidents Fund is the pet fund for the Clinton-Bush crime family. Association for Past Presidents Fund. Now, that's not a charitable organization. It's a narcotics fund investment corporation. I asked, how many managers are there? And he said, oh, I don't know exactly, 8 or 10. I said, what's it worth? At least a trillion. He said, this is 2013. He said, 5 trillion. I said, well, that sounds about right, because here we are, 2013. We've had 11, 12 years of war in Afghanistan, and the ramp up quickly to near 1,000 tons of heroin a year by 2006 or 2007. So we've had 6 or 7 years of $1 trillion a year in Afghan heroin production at the distribution level. And he said, yeah, I think your math adds up about right on the back of a napkin. I talked to him several months ago, and I said, you know, Cato, it was $5 trillion 3 or 4 years ago. It must be 7 now. And he said, oh, at least. Okay, so if in 1 week we have Prince Salman arresting people and looking to grab accounts for whatever reason, using whatever justification, I don't care right now, I'm just talking about the money and its availability.
Right.
And the number bandied about is about $800 billion from all the arrested accounts and frozen accounts. From all the arrested people and the frozen accounts, okay, he might get a couple hundred billion out of that. Okay, if that's done in Saudi, does the Pentagon have some extremely aggressive plans of confiscating narco funds that maybe are linked to Saudi Arabia as the initial inroad? Wow. Let's just assume that they could get a couple trillion from the Bush family. Well, you know, that might fund a great deal of reindustrialization. It doesn't touch the $20 trillion in the total government debt. I think something big is going on. I mean, we've got all this Paradise Papers of 300 closed sealed indictments of elites, movie stars, Hollywood directors and executives, and others. We got Hillary and McCain both wearing a boot on their legs, with goofy stories like McCain had an Achilles operation. I'd like to see the planning for that, or whether it was an ex post facto story. Hillary has a boot on her leg that was shown in London during an interview. And you know, the better question than what's the boot all about should be, why did both McCain and Hillary permit photos of the boot? Shoot them out of the room?
Yeah, what's underneath the boot?
Well, I don't think they're moving narcotics, but I think they've got...
No, is it an ankle bracelet? Who knows? I mean,
I think it's a house arrest bracelet.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Yeah, I wonder why it's so big. Because usually it's a small thing you put above your shoe. It looks like they've got a broken ankle.
Right, and you're going to fix the Achilles on a guy that has a brain tumor that's going to take him in the next couple of weeks?
He might have gone to the Rockefeller Institute in upstate New York and gotten a cure of that, unless they want him gone.
All right, hold on. Now you mentioned Rockefeller. I'm gonna jump right now into a different kind of that same direction. Again, recognize we've only got about 20 minutes left, so I've got to keep things moving, Jim. Brent has a question about the People's Bank of China. Is it a Rothschild bank? There's a rumor that Goldman Sachs and their buddies are accumulating gold and sending it to China. Was communist China and their central bank, was it set up by the Rothschilds?
I don't really know.
Okay.
I don't believe so, but I don't really know. Whenever questions in my colleague group of jackass colleagues present a question to the voice who knows Hong Kong very well, and from his Hong Kong big clients, he knows a good deal about China. Whenever we ask him, do the Rothschilds control the big banks and Central Bank of China, he kind of insults us in return for asking such a stupid question.
Fair enough. All right, let me double back to the Saudi Aramco question.
Sure.
And this has to do with that, you know, Trump, like you said, is out there, was openly campaigning to get them to list that thing on New York Stock Exchange, but you made a great point. Why would they do that with the bill that was signed, whatever it was, a year or two ago, allowing a seizure of Saudi assets, being able to sue them, and the families of 9/11 being able to sue them for what took place that day? So why does Trump desperately want that to happen, it seems, so badly? Is it just the prestige of it, you know, because he's all about, you know, self-promotion, everything else? Ah, look at this, the biggest IPO ever, and it's done here in New York. Or is there more to it than that?
There's always more to it than that. I think Trump made a mistake saying that the legislation to permit lawsuits against Saudi assets, claims for Saudi assets, he made a mistake claiming it was a good idea and a positive move. It made him look stupid, but he was able to please the elite crowd by coming out with a statement that really gives more, what's the word? Oh, gosh, I'm having a hard time with my vocabulary. Legitimacy to the official story, the official nonsense story of 9/11. You know, the Saudi young pilots who couldn't fly a Cessna took over a Boeing and crashed it into the World Trade Center. Here's a funny little detail. I've gotten this from pilots who are clients of mine. They have a test on pilot simulation equipment to turn off all the radar and the avionics and see if they can crash a plane flying just from visual detection and visual acumen, visual abilities,
right,
to fly and crash into the World Trade Center. You want to take a guess at what percentage of the professional pilots could hit the Trade Center?
I think you're going to tell me.
3% of professional pilots could hit the World Trade Center. Now, I guarantee you, if the kids took over the pilot's cockpit, they wouldn't know how to read the equipment, so they'd have to be using their visual abilities,
right,
and probably have less than a 3% chance, because that's what trained pilots have. Okay, I don't want to get into 9/11, but right. Okay, it was an inside job, and there are 1,000 points to support that whole platform in accusation. 1,000 points.
So back to your Aramco on this.
Okay, why don't you maybe refine the question and I'll try again.
Well, it was just, why does Trump want so badly to have the Aramco IPO listed on the New York Stock Exchange instead of someplace else?
Well, it's prestige, and it's a lot of, you know, it's something like 5% fees for the Wall Street firms.
Yeah, that's true too.
5% of $200 billion is, I guess that comes to $10 billion.
$10 billion. Yeah.
That's a lot of money.
That's even to the banks?
Yeah, well, you know, they make much more moving narcotics, money laundering with that. But it's something that we don't, the U.S. doesn't want, say, London or Hong Kong to seize. Because there'll be more. They're only putting up for sale 10% of Aramco. What if they put up 30% more? Well, then triple the $10
billion. Yeah.
They don't want it to go to competitor financial centers. I'd like to see a good piece of it go to Frankfurt, Germany.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Big blunder for Trump to sponsor and give support for the 9/11 survivor bill.
Yeah. All right. Let me ask you this question. This comes from Ed, who says, you know, he keeps hearing this Egon von Greyer's guy talk about Swiss banks refusing to give up allocated gold. You show up there, you want your gold, they won't give it to you. And so Ed was just wondering if perhaps you, The Voice, whomever, might have any additional info on that subject. You heard the same thing?
Well yeah, this is not new. I had a friend in 2010 who had a big account of something on the order of $17 million at ZKB, Zurich Cantonal Bank. Okay, ZKB. It's often known as ZKB more than anything else. A canton is like a district, a county, a state. Switzerland's not a huge country, so its little areas are called cantons with a K. So ZKB was this fellow's, let's just call him Mark. Okay, Mark had $17 million in ZKB, and he wanted to transfer the gold to gold money. And he was told, yeah, no problem, until he tried to do it. They told him, no, well, you can't do that. We would prefer to give you cash. This was 2010. So he got very angry because when you convert to cash and then you again seek to replace your gold account elsewhere, you pay a 3% fee. And a 3% fee on this is about $500,000. Which is exactly what Mark had to pay, because when he went to Zurich and had the arguments with the managers at the ZKB fund, they pointed out the fine print that under the discretion based on market conditions, the managers of the fund can redeem in cash if they so conclude, and they did. So von Greyer is a smart guy and he's a good guy, but this is not new. In fact, the article that came out and got a lot of attention was over a year old. Now I'm getting more stories. I got a couple clients who sent me a story saying that they know of a fellow who went to a Swiss bank without naming it. They said a major bank. There are only two major banks there, Credit Suisse and UBS. There are lots of little banks, but there are only two major banks. They went to the bank and asked for their $2 million worth of gold and were told, get lost. We'll redeem you in cash. So they asked for a signed statement from the bank official to the effect that they rejected their request for the redemption in gold bars. They came back with a couple of policemen and attorneys with a lawsuit prepared and criminal violations prepared, and were given the gold in less than 24 hours. So you could take either side to this. There are plenty of Swiss funds that have the fine print saying you can't take out anything except cash. But apparently there are some banks that maybe didn't write their contracts sufficiently with obscurity to the buyer, the investor, and you can extract the gold. So you got both sides. I say the majority of the Swiss financial firms do not redeem in gold and have the legal right to refuse in the contract fine print.
Yeah. All right, Jim, I've got three questions left. We'll try to burn through these pretty quickly, so then we'll begin to wrap up. One, this is a follow-up from, I think, our first question. Chuck, Canadian, who says, given the current state of the world, economy, politics in general, what is Jim's personal approach to investing in asset allocation mix, physical metal, cryptos, bonds, cash, Canadian marijuana stocks, perhaps, for the long term?
What's my allocation?
Yeah, or what's your personal approach? Yeah.
Okay, I've got to admit that I'm not a big expert in crypto. I'm learning rapidly and learning a lot of fine points about crypto and the various functional tokens.
I know there are people here. You told us about Ant Shares one of the times we spoke, maybe back on Memorial Day or 4th of July. And a number of people, that was the first time they heard of it. They went out and they bought some Ant Shares. And, man, have they ever gone up. So, nice job there.
Yeah, well, I heard that from one of the fellows who I appealed to help me understand better. He's in South America, and he's of a European descent. And he said that was one of his favorites. So I just mentioned it. You asked me, do you have one in mind? Yeah, I have one in mind. Well, I think Ethereum, I'm more focused right now on, I'll answer your question on allocation in a second. I'm more focused right now when it comes to the cryptos on the functional tokens, like Populous for invoicing, like Ethereum for building a business, a small business venture. I think that the functional tokens are going to win out. I think that the cryptos deserve a certain percentage, but if I were to answer, I would say I personally would not invest more than a token 10 grand in any cryptocurrency because I don't like their feature of not having a backing. I've asked many times, and I got some insults from the crypto experts and analysts. I say, what's the backing of a Bitcoin? And they say, well, electronic work. And I say, well, that doesn't really qualify as more than a pile of dog shit in my mind. I'm sorry. And they say, well, you know, electronic work is work. And now I'm hearing reports about all the verification of certain Bitcoins who use up the same amount of electricity as Denmark. Oh, okay, that's all well and good. I like silver. For the longest time before the cryptos hit the stage, I would advise clients, no stocks, no bonds, 80% silver, 20% gold. And several years ago, like 2011 or 12, I asked The Voice, what do you tell your clients? And he said, 90% silver, 10% gold. I said, what about platinum? And he said, well, platinum is good, but I think silver's better. Platinum's probably better than gold, but silver's the best of all. Now The Voice is telling me silver's going to be the center for various technological characteristics it has. I don't understand it all, but I'm trying to learn. Silver's going to be at the center of new energy systems for the next generation. And he expects silver to just, you know, blow your mind and the price rise that it takes. I said, is this before or after COMEX gets shut down? And we laugh. Okay, COMEX controls the price, but they don't move any metal. Okay, and we laugh. Mm-hmm. But they still control the price. If I were to start fresh and have a whole batch of money and be smarter about Bitcoin and the related cryptos, I would say probably 70% silver, 20% gold, 10% cryptos. And, you know, really almost nothing of the rest. I don't think diamonds are going to be a competitor to silver for a very strange reason. I think some of the, they're not fake, but some of the industrial production for making diamonds, they're coming to the fore. I think Russia has announced that they've got some diamond fabrication.
And you don't own any Tesla?
No, Tesla's got to solve their distribution problem for, you know, reloading the batteries. No, I'm not an early adopter. I did buy a cell phone, a Motorola, back in 1996 or so, 97. I bought a cell phone, and, you know, a big, heavy, clunky thing. I don't have a big, powerful smartphone right now. I get criticism from a couple of gals who I spend time with. They say, Jill, why don't you get a nice Galaxy like mine? I say, well, I bought your Galaxy, and I don't want to buy another. Besides, I'm happy with mine, and I don't want
the It still works. And it still works.
I don't want WhatsApp. Right. And I don't want to send pictures. And I don't want to read my email. I want a simple text message and cell phone. And I got one for, you know, $150 or less, and that's fine.
Here's the last question I have for you. And this is one of the emailed questions. And I just thought I'd save it for last. This comes from Bill, who just simply wants to know, which country would be a better choice to move to, Costa Rica or Panama?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's a good one.
I'd say Panama. And I don't like to criticize my home country. I've got roots here. I've got my own priorities here. It's a tough question to answer in an official adult manner. I'll give you some indications. The rent and condos and homes are much more expensive in Panama. I mean, like 30, 50, 70% more expensive. The traffic problems in Panama City are twice as horrendous as San Jose. And we got some problems here. They're just horrendous in Panama. The price of clothing, shoes, just various products like cell phones, not so much laptop computer, portable computers, but small-time cheaper electronic goods, products, they're all cheaper. They're half price in Panama. So rents are much higher, property's much higher, everything else is cheaper, and you've got less crime. That's Panama. But you also got an influx of 150,000 Venezuelans. They don't have space for them all.
Yeah, yeah.
And in order to keep things in order, they have a rule. Well, you can only stay here from Venezuela if you got a $5,000 corporate bank account. So there's a rush to create new companies, which is good for the, you know, $1,000 a year fee for the government. It's good for the lawyers who collect their own fee of a few hundred bucks per year. And then it's good for the banks that have $5,000 put in there from every Venezuelano. And they've got a lot of Colombians who move in. And, you know, a funny little fact of life is that when Teddy Roosevelt bought the Canal Zone, what country did he buy it from? Colombia. Panama was a state in the country of Colombia. Now Panama is a city in the country of Panama. They say Panama, right. República de Panamá. They say Panama, Republic of Panama. That's how they, you know, like New York's city of the state of New York. I mean, okay, Panama is a city and a state. Now it's a country. Panama has some financial advantages of, let's just call it roughly $8 billion a year from the canal passage fees. Doesn't sound like a lot. Well, how about if you multiply it by 100? Because their population is a little over 3 million, and ours in the U.S. is 300. So, would the United States finances look better if they had rent coming in from canal passage of $800 billion a year? Yes, it would. And that is the per capita argument I make for why Panama is doing so well. China is making inroads there. They're establishing free trade zones. They're buying up various things, and I think they finance the expansion of the canal to accommodate oil tankers.
That's right, yeah.
They've also got a Type 3 gold depository set up under German standards because a lot of Swiss clients, not Swiss people, Swiss clients didn't trust their gold with the Swiss corrupt bankers. And now they've got their gold in Panama City.
Interesting.
Yeah, very interesting. I like Panama. I've been there many times. I've probably been there over a dozen times. Every time I've gone there, one of the first impressions I have is, I'm sweating my ass off. It's very humid there. The second impression I have after an evening passes is, my gosh, if it's not for the Colombian gals there, these girls are dogs.
And that could be important too.
All right, so I don't get along with Colombian female types. Okay? I don't like artificial apparatus put into their chests. I don't like artificial sponge content put in their buttocks.
Hold on, I'm confusing. If there are a lot of Colombian women in Panama, but you think Panama is a better choice than Costa Rica, but you don't like Colombian women. I'm not following you all of a sudden.
One reason I don't like Panama is I don't like their ladies, okay?
Okay, fair enough. All right.
And I don't like the only pretty ones there, which are Colombian. And now the Venezuelans, I'm hearing, are starting to act like Colombians.
Oy.
Right. I'm talking about arrogant, pushy, self-interested, difficult, ornery, demanding. That's Colombian women. I don't want to have anything to do with them. I haven't for many, many years.
All right. So now, Jim, we've actually been at this now for 75 minutes. And what most folks don't know is Jim has an appointment here, and I got to let him go because he's got to go, right? You've
got
to be somewhere in like 10
minutes.
8 minutes. Yeah, so we better just move to wrap because, as everybody knows, we have to finish with the Final Four. Now, this will be a pretty easy Final Four. But remember how this works? You can usually answer with one word or sentence, and I've actually structured them so you can pretty much answer with one word. If you're ready, can I get started? Now, I'm actually... Given what we were just discussing, I'm a little reluctant to lead with Final Four number one, but I'm going to do it anyway.
I'll make it quick. Go ahead.
All right. It is Thanksgiving weekend, so Final Four number one, white meat or dark meat?
I like dark meat. I'll have a little white meat, but I find it just drier.
Fair enough.
Go on.
All right. Sweet potatoes or regular potatoes?
Sweet potato. I love yams.
Beans or peas?
I like them both, half and half.
And finally, pecan pie or pumpkin pie?
A little bit of each, but I love cherry pie and I like apple pie. I like most pies.
But
they got a lot of lemon meringue pie here, and I go for it once in a while.
Nobody has lemon meringue pie on Thanksgiving, for God's sake.
Not on Thanksgiving, but I do on a regular basis, so... You know, it's a pie favorite of mine.
All right, fair enough. All right, Jim, as we wrap then, again, your work can be found at goldenjackass.com. We're talking about the hat trick letter. It's two reports. Please tell everybody how it works, how they can find you, how they get a subscription, et cetera, et cetera.
Okay, I'll keep this brief. We're running out of time. It's www.goldenjackass.com. No commas or hyphens in there. Goldenjackass.com. I'm up to month number 164. It's 13 and a half years. Amazing. I never thought it'd go this long, but I think it still has a few more years to go. We're not resolving anything. So there's plenty to write about. It's just a gigantic clusterfark, if I'm not wrong. We're going to obstruct gold as long as we can, and gold will win coming from the eastern flank. Okay, on the website, there's a free page called main5.html, and that contains links to past interviews and some public articles. I just had a public article on Saudi Arabia pointing out in outline form, you know, 8 or 9, 10 different areas and details from those areas, and it's a very messy situation. They've created a giant mess, and they're not going to be able to fix this. Okay, but after you bounce around for a while, I suggest people sign up for the hat trick letter. We're getting to the point now where some magnificent forecasts, some very grand forecasts that I've been making for years are coming to pass. Like, I think the foundation for the gold trade note is this Shanghai gold oil contract combining with the other RMB-type contracts there. So we've got that, and now we're starting to see Germany break from the US-EU. They just had a decision by an attorney in the EU Commission who said that the Americans cannot block the Nord Stream progress by the Germans, either the construction or the financial firms. So the Germans won, the Americans and the EU lost. The Germans are going to have tighter relations with Russia. That was one of my forecasts. But there's another forecast I have that's kind of simple, the collapse of the Saudi kingdom. And I think we're starting to see some giant cracks, and whether they can patch the cracks and buy more time by confiscating huge amounts of money, I don't know. But I think Aramco is going to come to the fore and embarrass the hell out of them when it becomes clearer that they've depleted their oil reserves and they get accused of attacking Yemen, their neighbor, to replenish their oil. Okay, so I talk about the Yemen factor a good deal because it's draining the Saudi finances. All right, so there's some very big forecasts still pending, and I'm very curious to see what the next rollout's going to be regarding the reset of the non-dollar vehicles, as the voice calls them. You could call them platforms, vehicles. They're devices and from which are built a new standard that I think is going to lead directly to the gold standard. And I've been saying this for a long time, Craig. It's going to start with trade payments, probably with oil, the non-dollar, and then the gold. You know, that's why the Saudi sale of oil in RMB terms to China is so important. It'll start in trade, then move to banking, because you won't need to have treasury bonds so much in such high volume if you don't need it to buy oil or settle other contracts like shipments of containers, shipment of grain, whatever. And the last thing where the gold standard will become evident will be in the currencies. And they don't really need to be in the currencies if you've got the trade mechanisms in gold. But the banks are going to want to convert their treasury bonds, their euro bonds, their Japanese government bonds, and their UK gilts, which are bonds. They're going to want to convert them into gold bullion because we've had a good 60, 70 years of debt-based assets serving as foundations to the banking system, and that is the big problem right now. We don't have a hard asset foundation to the global banking system, and it's the Rothschilds' fault and the Western Central Bank franchise system's fault for carrying this out.
Debt is usually considered a liability, but yet in this current system, it's carried as an asset, which right there shows you, I mean, something's upside down, right?
Yes.
Well, all right. And no doubt as we wrap up this year and head to, my goodness, an even more tumultuous 2018, there's no doubt, no time like the present to be a subscriber to the Hat Trick Letter. Again, goldenjackass.com is where you find the work of the great Jim Willie. Jim, happy Thanksgiving, my friend, and perhaps we will visit again before the end of the year to kind of summarize where we might head in 2018.
Okay, I think 2018 is going to be the tumultuous year. I remember saying personally at the wrap-up of 2016 and January of 2017, I said that we're going to see a lot of breakdowns this year. We only saw some, but we did see the beginning of the rollouts of the reset contraptions, platforms, vehicles, devices, call it what you wish. The reset has begun. Here we are toward the end of 2017. Nothing has broken fully, except perhaps Saudi Arabia, which is doing a very sudden and desperate rescue.
It's going to be a wild year next.
Thank you, Craig.
You bet, my friend, and hopefully we'll visit again soon. But in the end, happy Thanksgiving. All the best to you and yours, and we'll talk again soon.
Okay. All right. Very good.
And everybody out there, thank you for listening. Appreciate your time. Happy Thanksgiving.